Hello, I'm Nicholas Love, Global Vice President of Marketing here at Hotwire Global, and I'm joined by Aziza Brinson, one of our Director of Media Strategy. And welcome to Hot Takes, the Hotwire podcast. Certainly delighted to be able to have this conversation. We are talking all things Afrotech. It was one of the dopest experiences that I've had, both personally and professionally. It was everything that Alexia Lewis said it would be. And if you have not heard that, please listen to the last episode. But Aziza, talk to me. I mean, you know, how was your experience? Let's kind of get down to the details.
I had a great time. I had very high expectations. And I want to say that Afrotech meant every bit of it. I love to see all of the Black people really wanting to have more careers and conversations around what it's like being Black in tech, what it's like to trying to find a job in tech as a Black person. And then wandering around and listening to some of the stories that some of the people had, it echoed a lot of my own experience for myself and my career. A lot of us share the same stories about, you know, having microaggressions in the workplace, having to find people to actually side with you and push you to the next level. And also, as you continue to go to the next level, finding yourself in the space by yourself and wanting to see more of us in those spaces. So I think it was a lot. It was reassuring for me. Like, I'm not the only person having to experience this, but for the culture, I think it was needed. We got to see us talk about the things that we're all experiencing, but we also got to have a lot of fun with it as well too.
Yeah, it was definitely a FUBU experience, right? For us, but you know, I want to build on a point that you just made with regards to this idea of elevating, right? And when you elevate and you get to certain levels, particularly when you are the only one in the room, right? When you know, you may be the highest, right? Person of color or specifically Black person within a respective organization, it can be a lonely feeling, right? It can be a lonely feeling in terms of a lack of community that you can vent to, lack of community in which you can really kind of check yourself and kind of get a different perspective. And to really, you know, walk into Afrotech because quite frankly, excuse me, you know, I didn't know what to expect, right? You know, there was a lot of build, there was a lot of excitement, right? When you look at the respective events. But, you know, it was also my first time, and the energy was rich. The connections were strong. The stories and quite frankly, the vibe was comforting, right? And so, you know, to really be able to experience the Afrotech executive track and really start to have some very real conversations with people who look like me, who might be at the same level or higher than I am, was really a very intellectually stimulating experience, right? Because you could borrow, you could, you know, and you could kind of take, right? You know, a good friend of mine once said to me that, you know, innovation is a beautiful thing. Imitation is just a lot faster, right? And so to be able to have some of the conversations that were going on. And, you know, one of the sessions that I attended really talked a little bit about, you know, energy management. And energy management, while it can be viewed as a broad term, right? And it means different things for different people. When you talk about the age of inclusion, right? Because that's where we're at, right? We, you know, when you look at things from a post George Floyd situation, right? It's not just about diversity, right? It's more on the equity and the inclusion aspect, and really, you know, starting to create atmospheres and cultures where people belong. And there's an argument, right, for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, right? But for the sake of today's conversation, you know, I do want to tie inclusion and belonging together. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion within the energy management course around does emotion actually belong in the workplace, right? Because, you know, both Black women and Black men are often characterized or described as being aggressive, when in true reality is merely passion, or as being intimidating, or, you know, this idea. And I said this in the last podcast that we had, because it was an article within Forbes, that that Black men are expected to only demonstrate one emotion, and that's happiness, right? In the workplace, anything else, right, seems to be a problem. And so, you know, I sat at this table and we were discussing, as a part of a breakout session, does emotion belong in the workplace? And the general consensus was that it does. But there was one contribution that says, you know, only when it's professional. And at that moment, right, I challenged that thinking. And I challenged it on the premise of, for far too long, people who have not looked like me have defined and have dictated what professionalism means. And it wasn't too long ago, right, where having tattoos or showing tattoos in the workplace was deemed unprofessional. It's current right now, specifically for Black women, right, wearing braids or natural hair, right, is being viewed as unprofessional. I have friends who are, you know, who are former reporters, right, who have had to sue news stations, right, because there was a concern around natural hair on air, right? This is current day. And so, you know, this idea that, you know, a certain demographic can define what professionalism is, a certain demographic can establish what are the appropriate colloquialisms in the workplace, right, needs to be challenged and quite frankly, needs to be eliminated, right? If we are the culture, if we are the country, if we are the society that is inclusive in scope. That's a different conversation, right? But as it pertains to energy management, right? You know, there are certain elements that they talk about, right? In terms of acknowledgement, right? Self-awareness, right? Self-management, and those three phases. And I think a lot of times what happens when people who look like us find us in scenarios where someone who does not look like us has said something that is triggering, right? Or says something when they lack the authority to tell you, oh, well, that's fine with me. Well, no, let's be frank. I'm not asking you for permission to sign off on this, right? So this idea that you need to tell me that it's okay with you is irrelevant, right, to the discussion or the objective that we're trying to accomplish at this point. But when you think about energy management and the three phases that I talked about, right, particularly the last one from a self-management perspective, understanding and identifying the triggers, right, so that you can self-manage yourself from having a reaction that's not necessarily effective for the scenario or, quite frankly, the environment you're in. So I saw a lot of correlations, right, with, you know, energy management, and quite frankly, a lot of scenarios that I've had to face as a Black executive throughout my respective career. So, I mean, a lot of good tools to learn. I know I just kind of preached a Sunday sermon, so my bad.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I was loving it. I think one of the points that you made in terms of energy management that I want to kind of hone in on is just understanding that we don't speak the same language, point blank period. I don't even want to say it and make it sound just better. It's just that we come from different backgrounds. We have different cultures than our wider counterparts. So understanding that and knowing that, I already know, because they've been the ones gatekeeping what professionalism looks like, what it sounds like, where you have to kind of decide, okay, do I want to be in this space and continually have to code switch and check myself on an everyday basis? Or would I feel better to not have to do that, work with people who look like me, but I actually not see the success that my white counterparts are having because I just want to feel comfortable? Somebody like me, I'll put myself in an uncomfortable position because success is always the goal. But I know in those situations, if my manager doesn't look at me as if like I'm professional enough, because maybe I don't speak my words with the clarity or the tonality of others around me, or maybe I have a certain way that I speak, or just verbiage that I use, where it's like, wait, are you saying the same thing that I'm saying? Then we're going to have consistent times where we're not seeing eye to eye. I'm going to continue to get overlooked. I'm going to continue not to be seen as somebody who can be in leadership, because what you think that looks like doesn't, I don't reflect that. I don't give off that same energy, and it's not fair. And the fact that it can impact climbing the corporate ladder is one of the main reasons why I love the session about understanding that like having a mentor is cool, but you need to have a sponsor. You need to have people who are in space, in good enough positions, that can advocate for you on a consistent basis. You still have to show up. You still have to do your work. This person can't do it all for you, but you need to make sure you have sponsors who are making sure that you're being included and being part of the conversation, because people are not just putting up their hands, right, and saying like, oh, this person deserves it. Meanwhile, my white counterparts, because they're automatically included into that part of the culture that's seen as professional, are already there. So you need to have that. And I think that watching a lot of people attend those sessions and learn that and take that in, it impacted so many people and how they feel about like getting into this like tech world. I also love the fact of seeing so many of us there, but you let recruiters and other people tell it, oh, we can't find any. You can't find black execs. You can't find black execs at this level. I was just at an event where it was 20,000 attendees, and it was majority black.
25,000.
It was pretty big. There was they were at big companies, small companies, leaders of companies, entrepreneurs on every scale. So many people that we could be working with, partnering with, but we keep saying they're not there. Somebody's not telling the truth here, or somebody's choosing not to look for it.
Yeah, that's what you call mediocrity, right? Because quite frankly, right, when you are given a task, you either succeed or you fail. And this idea, right, that there's a lack of black talent, right, is a mediocre statement. And the fact that it's being accepted means that people aren't working hard enough. People aren't working smart enough. People are not necessarily optimizing the behaviors or the tendencies. And so I talk a lot about, you know, to my mentees, to my staff, to whoever wants to listen, right? Are you asking the right questions? Right. And so my challenge to recruiters, right, who kind of come back. No, I'm sorry. My challenge to CEOs, my challenge is to COOs or CFOs, whomever human resources reports into, people and culture, however you want to be defined. Right. Is, are you asking the right questions on why people aren't able to get the job done? Because if you have any type of environmental or situational awareness, there's a lot of conferences, right, that are popping up that are actually elevating awareness of the intellectual capabilities of people who are black. There's an actual conference that's called Where Are All the Black People At? Literally, I am not making it up, right? And so I don't want to hear anymore. With the 25 days we have left in 2022, and the year in front of us, right? I don't want to hear anymore that there's a lack of black talent in marketing and communications and public relations and technology and finance and home and good. I'm talking about every walk of life, right? What does not exist, right, quite frankly, is the will to go find it.
Exactly.
And that's the real question. That's the real discussion, right? And what's driving the lack of will? Is it concern? Is it fear? Is it commitment to familiarity? Is it commitment to not exposing yourself to diverse thoughts and diverse people? What's driving those types of things? That's the real question that people need to be having. And I think those are the real challenges that the CEOs, the COOs, the CFOs have to be answering. But when there's a lack of us in the C-suite, I believe in 2022, excuse me, I think there was less than 10 black CEOs in Fortune 500 companies. That is pitiful. And so for all the companies that say, oh, well, DE&I is a focus of our company. In what aspect? Right?
Because when we look at budgets and everybody's tightening on their budgets right now, right? They always talk about and say, well, what's the business use case? If you are committed to DE&I, then you have to, it has to be a business. It's a business need. You need to, we have to start making these changes. I was at one of the Uber Experiences events for Afrotech, and I was talking to a gentleman who worked on the AI side at Google. And he was saying like, yeah, like, you know, they did cut a lot of like travel, company travel and stuff like that. But because I do work on some of the DEI stuff, they consider it a business need. So they continue to let us travel for conferences and do all of that. That's how I was able to attend here. And I was like, see, that's important. You mean Google, one of the biggest companies in the world, is already establishing that this is a need. We have to continue to make sure that we expand where necessary. So we have to prioritize DE&I. If Google can do it, the rest of us can do it. Like we can. I've seen so many companies where when you look at the PR industry, right? A lot of people that I've seen on the tech side, they didn't go to school and was like, I'm going to be in PR. I did. I majored in it, but a lot of these people, you hear them, they're like, oh, I have a poli sci background, or I worked in law, I worked in this. Oh, okay, so what you mean is, how did you get into PR? They found that your skills were transferable. Why can't we do the same things with Black people? When I was sitting and talking to all the different people that I spoke with at Afrotech, there were so many skills that I was like, oh, this is, you could completely do this type of job. Like, it's, you have transferable skills. So even if we say we can't find them within our industry, I feel like that's a lie, because we found so many people in PR who didn't start in PR and didn't have PR experience. You're not looking in the places that you can, and you're choosing to be short-sighted, right? Like, there are people that are execs at big companies that may not even want to do their job, those type of jobs anymore, but they could look at PR and say like, you know what? That's something that I've never done, but because I've run a company at this level, I know I can make it happen. Like, there are tons of transferable skills that I don't think that people are leaning into. And I think a lot of people who did attend Afrotech, that's what they were looking for. Like, they didn't want to be in their careers anymore. They don't want to be at the companies that they're working for anymore. And they're trying to find a way to break into tech. But they think, their thought of tech is, I have to code. Their thought of tech is like, I need to be an engineer. I need to have all this experience. Maybe I'm not the smartest. And it's like, no, what are your skill sets? Like, you know, we can break it down for you. We can find you a job. And I feel like we've already done the work knowing how those skills can be transferable. But companies now on the recruiting side need to do more of the work to go and find it every time they say that they can't find us.
Great point. I met two women who were actually data scientists. And we talk about data being one of the most valuable assets that exists. Quite frankly, I believe it's more valuable right now than oil, which, you know, we've known as being the most valuable. And it's interesting because, you know, if data is one of the most valuable assets, and you start to think about PR, you start to think about marketing, you start to think about comms, data is influencing the strategies and the activities and the actions that are going on, right? And so, you know, I can remember having some conversations with these two women, right? And just absolutely brilliant minds, and thinking like, the transferable skills that you have as a data scientist, I would love to have, right? You know, as a marketer, right? Because it's influencing and informing so many different things, right? So I just really wanted to kind of double down on your point with regards to transferable skills and really, you know, being creative, recruiters and organizations being creative on understanding that you don't necessarily need to be looking for positional fits, but you need to be looking for skilled adds, right? Because, you know, when you're adding capabilities to a particular position, now you're stretching it, right? Which then in turn can enhance what the outputs of that position are, which would then ultimately enhance the production for the organization. So, you know, 1,000 retweets, if you will, for the gems that you just dropped. Let's talk a little bit about the networking. I mean, you know, I think I was at the Wale Day Party, right? And one of the DJs shouted out like, "Yo, this is like a corporate Black homecoming," right? And quite frankly, it was in a lot of different aspects. A lot of networking, a lot of phenomenal connections. I know you spent a lot, you know, you spent some time over at the booth, you know, as did I. But would love to just kind of, you know, really kind of get a quick glimpse from you in terms of some of the more memorable conversations you had from a networking perspective.
Well, the biggest conversations that I enjoyed having were actually talking to a lot of the small business marketplace area where the American Express booths were, because so many of these platforms, I felt, not only were they were like great platforms in terms of like, you know, sustainability and everything, but they were platforms that gave you access to more people of color that were doing things on these platforms. And so what I loved about just the event itself and networking and then seeing other people, it's like we always hear Black people sometimes as and look at it as like crabs in a barrel, right? Always tearing each other down. But at Afrotech, it was like literally completely the opposite, right? Like it was like so many people where they're like, "Look, I have access to these people. This could be a great partnership, or I have these type of people on my platform." Like Black and Green, I believe was the name of the e-commerce platform that one of the girls had, and it just had it was an e-commerce platform with nothing but Black entrepreneurs, and all of the products that they sold on there were sustainable. And I was like, that's great. I forgot how many people she had, but I know it was like over 1,000 people on that platform. For something like our HIP program, that's amazing, right? Because not just the platform itself could be a good opportunity for us to bring that in, but you could give us access to a plethora of different leaders that could also be helpful for the program as well. And so I just love that the conversations were all about us putting each other on. Yeah. Everybody was like, "I see you. Like, let me talk to you about this. Let me show you how this would be great." I loved talking about how, like, you know, if I'm in comms and this is how I think about like media relations and strategy and how like I love building relationships with like reporters, but somebody else is like you know, an engineer, but they want to know more about media relations because they don't hear about it enough. It's like how can that actually make my company go like do better or like have a further reach? I didn't understand it. And just having the collection and the mind share of like just talking about your different worlds, I love to see it, because once again, they love to say that we're not there, and there's plenty of us out here experiencing that. So I love that. I think one of my favorite conversations that I had, I was talking with a young woman at one of the events, and she was just talking about how she wanted to meet as many people as possible. So she was literally just like putting herself out there and talking to every single person, telling her her story, listening to their stories. And I was like, I've been to a lot of events, and a lot of people sometimes they travel and they just go and they just participate for whatever they have to participate in and hang out with like their coworkers and they go off and you know, it's very transactional. I was so taken by her personality. Like, we were actually in a conversation for a little, like for a bit. You would have thought that we were friends. We had known each other before. We took pictures, everything. And I was like, this is what we mean when we want culture. When you go to work, you don't naturally get that. But these people who don't know me from a can of paint, who I may never see again in life, treated me with so much, you know, like, you know, love and acceptance. And that's what we're all looking for. It's sad that we don't always get that. And it's not to say like, it doesn't mean, oh, I don't like my coworkers, but the culture is different because we come from different, you know, backgrounds. And it just feels a little bit more comforting sometimes to be around that. And I think that like just seeing that and feeling it is was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. No, listen, to really build on that, I had, I mean, I won't disclose the, you know, the companies, right? But I had about three conversations that literally went 2 hours with people who, you know, I had literally just met, right? Because the energy, because the interest, because of the familiarity with the psychological makeup, you know, where things were. And it was really just refreshing to, you know, understand and discuss, right? What are some of the connection points in which things can kind of manifest, right? And so to your earlier point, right, where, you know, you were talking a little bit about, you know, people had a genuine interest of putting other people on. And, you know, and I spent a lot of time throughout the week talking a lot about our HIP program, right? And for those of you who may not necessarily be as familiar with the Hotwire Ignites Possibilities program, you know, we're providing up to about $1 million in pro bono marketing, brand, communications, consulting services, right, to, you know, minority-led organizations with a specific focus within tech. And there was a lot of interest and a lot of intrigue, right, around this. You know, I spent some time at the founders reception, right? I spent some time at the HBCU, you know, D9 reception, you know, shout out to the noobs, right? And I spent a lot of time in different places, you know, talking about, you know, this program and you know, for Hotwire, you like to hear that it's a differentiating program as an agency. But I think what was more rich, right, and what was more valuable is that people could see the possibilities of how this program could help them, right? And I think, you know, when you're in the early stages of business development or, you know, startups or whatever it may be, you know, you're penny pitching. Right. And you're trying to figure out, right, like, do I spend money on this marketing campaign or do I spend money on like staff? Right. And certainly, you know, that being viewed as a valuable resource was just really incredible. Right. And I've continued, you know, to have a lot of different conversations post Afrotech. Right. So, you know, the networking and the relationships that have been developed, right? You know, I'm very certain, right, in terms of some of the things that I experience are things that are going to last for quite some time because of the genuine connections that were actually being established. So, you know, I guess my last question for you, you ready for next year?
Oh, absolutely. Not only am I ready for next year, I want there's to experience it. Everybody was asking about it. I was like, we need more people here. We need a larger presence. I have things I want to say to everybody who wants to attend, who will be in attendance. I want other people to be able to experience it and be involved. I feel like this is an opportunity for us. If we want to be seen as thought leaders, I know we aspire to be that, but if we want to be seen as thought leaders in this space, if we want to increase awareness around not just the Hotwire brand, but comms careers in general, which is what we're also fighting up against when we think about Black people, we need to be where we show up. We need to be in these spaces. We need to be leading the conversations. And I cannot wait to be in attendance next year. I cannot wait to see who will also be there next year. I'm ready for this. I'm so glad Alexia brought this into our Hotwire world because we have not done this before. And I am like ecstatic to go back.
Yeah, no, listen, same here. I have visited that website more times than I've visited ESPN.com in the last few weeks, right? Trying to get a sense, like, when are the dates being posted? Like, what's up, right? I have stated publicly, I want to speak at Afrotech next year. And I want to establish a broader presence, and I want to completely disrupt the industry and how we amplify and how we maximize the strategic partnerships that potentially could, could form between Hotwire Global Communications and Afrotech. I'm not about to sound like Deion Sanders and say, "Oh, God called me to do this," but I am. I do have it on my mind, and I do have it on my heart, right, to really develop some transformative things in the upcoming year. And I'm just looking for a date to be posted, because you know I'm in there like swimwear. So phenomenal experience. You know, at times it felt like intellectual church. At times it felt like homecoming. Yeah. At times it felt like, you know, everything that's good about life, right? And I'm just, again, major shout out to Alexia for bringing this, because it was a phenomenal experience. So looking forward to next year. I'm Nicholas Love. That's Aziza Brinson. Hope you enjoy the podcast and the amount of mics that have been dropped today. We're out.